From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Democrat Calvin Ball, after three terms on the Howard County Council, is bringing that experience to the county executive job. We ask about his plans and priorities, including attracting businesses, growing wages, and reducing school overcrowding.
I think the community, the Board of Education, the school system need to talk about how we can have appropriate redistricting that keeps neighborhoods together and start really working toward having more school sites.
Then Nicholas Redding of Preservation Maryland shares his views on the future of historic Ellicott City, hammered by two massive floods in 2 years. Can the character of Main Street be preserved while putting safety changes in place? How have other historic areas tackled flooding? It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Howard County is one of the richest places to live in the country. Census data estimates the median household income exceeds $115,000 a year, and the median home value is a whopping $439,000. But even a wealthy county faces challenges. School overcrowding, planning for the safety and future of historic Ellicott City, attracting businesses that offer living wage jobs. Newly inaugurated Howard County Executive Calvin Ball, a Democrat, comes to the job with plenty of experience. He served three terms on the county council, representing portions of Columbia, Elkridge, Ellicott City, Hanover, and Jessup. And he joins us this morning to talk about his plans and priorities. Calvin Ball, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
What's your top priority?
Top priority right now is really bringing everyone together. We're in an exciting time. Over the last 4 years, a lot of people have been talking about different things we need to work on, but we know we can't solve all of the problems in 1 year, maybe even 4 years. So right now, we're just working to figure out what are the priorities that are our shared priorities.
As I mentioned, school crowding is a challenge in Howard County. Enrollment has risen 13.5% over the past decade. A report by Howard County Office of School Planning estimates that one-third of the county's public schools will be over capacity by 2022. How will you address overcrowding in the schools?
Overcrowding is a huge and serious issue. We have elementary, middle, and high school overcrowding that is anywhere between 120 to going toward 150%, which is unacceptable. It adversely impacts the teaching and learning environment. I think there needs to be a combination, and this kind of speaks to my style as someone who works with everyone and collaborates. I think the community, the Board of Education, the school system need to talk about how we can have appropriate redistricting that keeps neighborhoods together and start really working toward having more school sites.
I had been under the impression that the county school board was not looking at redistricting. Maybe I'm wrong. Is this a change in policy for the county?
So we also elected some new Board of Education members. The previous Board of Education started evaluating the prospect of redistricting and implemented some policies such as Jumpstart and early college. I think in talking
Jumpstart
with
is
Jumpstart is where students can have dual enrollment with the community college and can focus on certain programs. So if they're at a school that's highly overcrowded, there might be another school that's under-enrolled, which kind of speaks to the need for some redistricting, a school that's under-enrolled that might have a certain program. And then a student who might live in one neighborhood can go to a school in another focused on that new program.
But it sounds like you're putting more hope in evening things out with redistricting than in those kinds of dual enrollment and shifting.
I think we need to have a holistic approach that works for each school, each educator, and each student. So there are the programs, the innovative programs, there's appropriate redistricting, and there's making sure that we have new sites for schools.
The county itself recently received a warning from its Spending Affordability Advisory Committee that the current spending patterns are, quote, unsustainable, close quote. How will you approach the budgeting process.
So within the next week, I'm going to be announcing my new Spending Affordability Committee. And last year's looked at the FY19 budget, the one in which we're currently operating, and said not only for this budget, but for the foreseeable future, we're looking at about a 3.5% growth, which is not very robust at all.
Growth in revenue.
Correct. And so that means we really have to prioritize. And that's why I think these listening sessions and the transition team and those conversations are important so that we can look over the next 4, 8, 10 years and say, these are our priorities and here's how we're going to do it in a way that also respects our revenue and what people are dealing with.
So it's too early to ask you what's going to get cut or if anything.
It is way too early. But, you know, we're going to have these community conversations.
You are holding a series of listening sessions across the county. There are three this week, including one this afternoon at the North Laurel Community Center. We'll link to the list at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. At the first session last week at Bain 50 Plus Center, what concerns did residents bring to your attention?
So we have been adding listening sessions now. We have about 10 total. The first one at Bain, we had nearly 200 people come out. And there were many issues from transportation to wanting to work collaboratively on a full spectrum of housing affordability to ensuring that we address issues for our older adults, but also for those who have mental illness concerns, those who are fighting addiction and opioids, and a myriad of issues.
Back to the schools and their budget. Howard County Public Schools reported a $37 million health care fund deficit at the close of the 2017-2018 fiscal year. $500 million in maintenance of schools has been deferred. Heating and air conditioning replacements, plumbing, electrical repairs. How will you find the money to resolve these problems?
So I am very concerned about the budget deficits and deferred maintenance, which have grown not just over the last few years, but some over decades. And I think the community recognizes these things won't be solved in a day, a year, or even a few years. But we can prioritize and we can work together on solutions. I have asked my budget director to work with the school system and some of our educators to actually reconstitute a team to evaluate how to address these budget deficits. I don't think that we should be having conversations about explosive growth in spending if we haven't even addressed the structural challenges when it comes to the budget deficits. Also, when it comes to the deferred maintenance, I'm very concerned about ensuring not only the health, safety, and welfare of our educators and children and families, but I think it's more cost effective if there are inefficient systems that aren't working well and we might even have to close down schools. Let's fix those systems. Let's make sure that not only do we look at capacity, but we look at health, wellness, and safety.
That's Howard County Executive Calvin Ball here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his plans and priorities for the county. Let's talk about affordable housing. Nurses, teachers, police, firefighters, these are people with essential jobs in the county who often can't afford to live there. How will you work to preserve the vision of James Rouse, the founder of Columbia, who designed the town for a mix of people of all racial income and age groups?
I'm so glad that you talked about the vision. The vision is really about a community that is the best for all of us. And part of that community is ensuring a diversity of housing affordability. Part of it is also ensuring that people can afford to live there. So there's a multi-pronged approach. One, deconcentrating some of the affordable housing that you see in some neighborhoods. So diversifying the housing mix there where there is a lot of lower income housing, trying to incentivize higher income housing, whether it's more townhomes mixing in where there might be only apartments. And then where you see a lot of new developments coming online, ensuring that we hold developers accountable. One, to build affordable housing, and two, that we help address some of the hurdles that people face. Many times when people look to purchase homes, some of the big challenges are the down payment and settlement help. So creating and funding housing loan funds that offer zero or low interest loans and helping with the down payment and settlement help is something. And then finally, to help increase the living wages of jobs so that when we have educators, firefighters, police officers, nurses, those who help make our community the best it can be for everyone, helping to ensure that we march toward over the next few years living wages.
Well, one of the goals you've articulated is to increase the county's accessible commercial base from 22% to 25% within 5 years. Is that the percentage of property in the county that the county can tax?
So right now we have, as you indicated, a commercial accessible base of about 22%, which is one of the lowest in the state. I think we're the third lowest. We have exciting opportunity in downtown Columbia. We've got Nike, who is going to be coming in with 12,000 square feet in new jobs. We have Tenable, which will bring in 700 cyber jobs. We have Gateway. Gateway will be an innovation district. And when you look at the Gateway Park, that's about 920 acres. And so if we look at just those two areas and then what we can do on the Route 1 corridor and revitalizing some of our older Columbia villages, Savage Mill, some agribusiness out in West, we can increase that commercial accessible base by helping to grow small and local businesses. Oftentimes what happens when people look at development, they focus on the residential component. And the more that we can focus on the commercial component with living wage jobs, the more we can grow the revenue and that tax base without actually having to ever even increase the tax rate.
What makes you think these will be businesses that would diversify the profile of Howard County?
When we look at economic development, we have so much potential. Our proximity to 95, to the Route 1 corridor, to 175, our highly rated school system. And I think all we need to do is make it so that businesses recognize that we want them to be here, businesses that will pay that living wage. You know, over the last few years, we've lost some businesses to Northern Virginia, to D.C., and some, frankly, to our friends and neighbors here in Baltimore City or Montgomery or Prince George's. I think as long as we can stay competitive in Howard County to keep the businesses we have and then work together as a region and state to draw in new and exciting businesses, and you talked about why would they want to come? Top-rated school system. We can improve the transportation system. You know, when we talked about, when we looked at Amazon was an interesting test case. Some of the things they looked at was how can they get their employees around, back and forth to work, around the community, around the region. Howard County has one of the worst transportation systems and multimodal systems in the region. We need to make sure that we're connecting people in a more efficient, cost-effective way.
Thank you very much for this conversation. Thanks.
Thank you.
Howard County Executive Calvin Ball took office on December 3rd. At the On the Record page, we have a link to the listening session information. Quick break here on the record. I'm Sheila Cast. When we're back, a historic preservationist view of Ellicott City's future. Thank you.
the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. 2,000-year floods in 2 years. On July 30th, 2016, and May 27th of this year, rushing waters devastated homes and businesses in historic Ellicott City. 3 people lost their lives. What can be done to shift stormwater away from Ellicott City's Main Street? How can buildings be fortified against future floodwaters? Can historic Main Street keep its character while implementing safety changes? When we spoke with Howard County Executive Calvin Ball, I asked why, as a councilman, he voted against 3 funding bills for a 5-year, $50 million plan to address flooding in Ellicott City. The plan called for building facilities upstream to retain water and for demolishing more than a dozen buildings in downtown Ellicott City.
So I had some concerns. When we see a $50 million 5-year plan that would still leave 4 to 6 feet of flood water on Main Street, and that's at the end of the 5 years, come up a month before an election, that we would have a brand new county council, a brand new county executive, and many people throughout Howard County who had concerns, I thought it was worth having a collaborative evaluative process to see, is there a way that we can make Ellicott City safer, faster, and do it in a more cost-effective way? And I think that, you know, if you look at those bills that I had concerns about, one of them was taking money from a fire station. And if safety is a priority, why are we delaying a fire station to move money? I think there were concerns that I had about the demolishing of the buildings. I think that we need to ensure that Old Ellicott City is safe. We need to do it in a way that also, to the extent possible, preserves the historic nature and the character of Ellicott City. We want to make sure that Ellicott City is thriving and exciting. And if people come there for certain things that make it special, to the extent possible, we need to preserve those things.
Will you direct the county to acquire the buildings located on Lower Main Street?
I think that's something we should definitely look at. Within the next few weeks, I will be announcing a revised plan that I think will be a collaborative plan. We'll ensure that Ellicott City is safe. I know that a lot of people are anxious, but I want to make sure that we do it right, and I want to make sure that we do it in a way that we all feel good about it.
Howard County Executive Calvin Ball. Joining us now to share his perspective on strengthening Ellicott City against future floods is Nicholas Redding, Executive Director of Preservation Maryland, which advocates for the preservation and restoration of heritage sites across the state. Welcome back to the show.
It's good to be here.
After the first flood in Ellicott City, Preservation Maryland set up an emergency fund, coordinated building stabilization, and opened a resource center for owners of historic properties. How was the response after the second flood, similar or different?
It was a little different because we had really almost, they were so close together, these floods, we had almost just wrapped up our work when we got hit again. And a lot of the support and the assistance that we were providing after that first 2016 flood was trying to work with building owners and property owners to help them figure out the regulatory process, tax credits, loans, how to find, you know, valid contractors. And since we had just been through that, a lot of these folks didn't need that assistance. And we really saw our role as shifting to trying to figure out the bigger question here, which is how do we keep this from happening again? And also at the same time, how do we protect the historic resources?
What did you make of the plan put forth by then County Executive Kittleman and Councilman Weinstein?
Well, we were pretty outspoken in our opposition to it and worked diligently within the local community to point out some of the failings we saw in the plan.
What is your opposition and what would you do instead?
So even though I'm a preservationist and we're a preservation organization, first and foremost, no matter what community you're talking about, safety is the primary concern. And so the plan that was rolled out, that $50 million plan, still left 4 to 6 feet of dangerous floodwaters on Lower Main Street, even after the demolition, after all of the work that they would do. So we felt at the very least, if you're going to demolish a good chunk of the historic district, we'd like to see that result in it being safer. But also from a preservation standpoint and really what makes Ellicott City unique, we're talking about a plan that would have eliminated a good chunk of the historic district. And that plays right into what is the future of this community? Can it prosper when it's missing a good chunk of what makes it special?
Well, describe that. I mean, in your view, how would removing these historic buildings change the character of Ellicott City?
Well, I mean, anytime you take out any structure from a historic landscape or historic district, it's going to change the rhythm, the feel, the look of that place. When you talk about taking out dozens of structures, you're talking about changing the very nature of that place. So we were concerned, and we're pretty outspoken in that opposition, about this idea and what it would mean for the economic future of that community.
That's Nicholas Redding, Executive Director of Preservation Maryland, which advocates on behalf of heritage sites across the state. Here on The Record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the future of historic Ellicott City, which suffered two devastating floods in 2 years. So Preservation Maryland put forth some alternative options, including suggesting creating a state park. Give us an overview of these options.
We wanted to throw out some other options, that there were other things that could be done. And that was everything from saving the historic structures, but perhaps vacating the first floor and allowing that first floor to have water kind of move through it. So if we had another flood, it wouldn't be devastating. The building could be secured.
So are you talking about literally taking the walls out of the first floor, just leaving the supports?
Basically just leaving the supports so that water could kind of pass through it. And that's sort of a standard way of being able to have passive floodwaters move through a structure if you expect there to be constant flooding.
Where else have we seen that?
Well, that's
close
actually
to us.
Yeah, that's kind of ties into your question about the state park concept, which is Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, is a good example, and we held that up in our report where we said here's a community that faced constant persistent flooding. The economic viability of that community was in question. In that case, they turned it into a national park. But there are structures there in the lower town where they flood so constantly that the second floor is still intact, but the first floor is sort of left open so that the waters can kind of pass through it. So there are ways of saving structures and saving a streetscape and keeping the community looking the way it did without completely eliminating and demolishing historic structures. And we just wanted to point out that there were other options on the table.
What are some of your other options?
So there were just a variety of either just leaving the buildings completely vacant or having second floor space. We also were emphatic that we were fully supportive of public acquisition of the structures because we don't want to be tone deaf or unaware of the challenges and the severe issues that property owners face in Lower Ellicott City. Rebuilding over and over again is, you know, it's a financially burdensome process. And so the idea of public acquisition, we weren't opposed to. It's what happened with that structure once the public dollars acquired it. And under the Kittleman-Weinstein plan, it would have been demolition. And we wanted the county to think a little bit more creatively about that.
Yeah, let me pick up on your point. I mean, some business owners have expressed support for the plan proposed by former County Executive Kittleman. For them, part of the value would come from having the greatest impact as soon as possible. So what do you tell them?
First and foremost, back to safety. It still leaves dangerous floodwaters at Lower Main. And in terms of the biggest impact and fast, it's a 5-year plan, and most of that work is backloaded. So it really wouldn't have been done if we had followed that plan to a T for several years. So it's not as if moving forward with this plan, everything would be fixed in the next 6 months. It's still a long-term plan. You know, we're not tone deaf to those concerns, but we think that there are other ways of achieving that and that this is not the only way to move forward.
Do you have a sense of what your alternatives would cost?
Well, I mean, we're talking about a $50 million plan. And one of the other alternatives that, not even an alternative, but one of the other things that we thought deserved further study was tunnel boring.
Creating a tunnel for floodwaters.
Literally putting a tunnel under Ellicott City and conveying the Tiber and the Hudson down to the Patapsco River. And this is something that could be done. And shockingly, we also commissioned an engineering review of the county's engineering reports. And our review by a national firm found that even though they attempted to do a cost-benefit analysis of the tunnel boring piece, they never came up with a cost for it. So they had a cost-benefit analysis with cost missing. And we think it would be prudent to take a look at that. You look at, you know, asking before about examples of places where this has been done. Frederick, Maryland, which is not too far away, their entire downtown has been protected since the 1970s by a large tunnel conveyance system that moves the floodwaters through downtown and prevents the downtown from flooding. So there are ways of doing this, and we think that they deserve further study.
So working with the new county executive, Calvin Ball, what will you ask him to consider when it comes to planning for Historic Ellicott City's future?
We've talked to County Executive Ball, and we're very encouraged by everything that he's said since he's been elected about the prudent planning that he wants to do. And we don't want to see more plans. We don't want to waste more time. We just think that certain aspects of this, like tunnel boring, like the alternatives to demolition, should be considered. And I should say that there were aspects of the Kittleman-Weinstein plan that were good and that I think everybody agreed on. And those aspects were the upstream pieces, the flood mitigation upstream, trying to slow water and the amount of water coming down to lower main is important, and we should move forward as fast as we can. And we've expressed our willingness to support and help the Ball administration come up with concepts that could save structures at lower main, make lower main safer, and provide for the economic future of that community. That's not an easy task, but we think it can be done if people really put some thought into this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nicholas Redding is Executive Director of Preservation Maryland. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.